The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Things are getting crazy. Yeah, I don't know if I told you, but my friend who's a BA pilot has just told me that they've had the third BA pilot die in the last 7 days. Yeah, third pilot dead in the last week. The first two guys were in their 40s and 50s. This guy, mid-30s, perfect fit. No underlying conditions. Gets his second jab. He's dead within days of the second jab. Exactly the same with the first two.
That's some audio from an unidentified male. It's making the rounds on social media. Lots of people with some comments there. And, of course, the social media police, they're Johnny on the spot to try to blot it out, this conversation, to try to fact-check everything about these British Air pilots that have died shortly after the vaccine. We'll get to that and much more in just a bit. I'm Stephen Flurry, your host of this program, The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining us, and we certainly appreciate the work that our broadcasting partner, CRN, Digital Talk Radio, sending this out to 11 million homes. And also, of course, that's just audio only, but you can get to the video presentation of this this program at our website, thetrumpet.com/live. So we're having new viewers and listeners joining us every week, and we certainly appreciate that you are making time out in your day for the truth. Tomorrow's news today, as we've said for so many years with our Trumpet magazine, and you can subscribe to the Trumpet magazine, or you can read some of the content that appears in that monthly magazine at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just, again, some quick updates on the Celtic Throne performances last night. The crew was in Birmingham, Alabama, performing in front of 350 people. We got lots of good feedback. My wife was texting me this morning, telling me about what some of the people who attended the concert, what they were saying after the fact. And we have also been collecting quite a bit of feedback in recent weeks. We put together this montage. I've been meaning to play it for you for a couple weeks now. It's from the Texas performance down in Irving, Texas. And since we keep running out of time at the end of the program, I'll just play this short montage as a reminder. We've got Nashville coming up on Monday, but just as a reminder of how the audience is reacting to Celtic Throne, here's the Irving montage.
It was wonderful.
I love the costumes and the dancing, yes.
Just an awesome show, that's all.
I feel like that was my best one yet, but I think other people had different things to say.
Why was it your best one?
Because I made the fewest mistakes and it was easiest to give to the crowd because they were very expressive.
We just loved the show. It was fantastic. And we loved it being family-oriented and patriotic. Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you.
Great. What was your favorite part?
The patriotic part.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, and the family.
Yeah.
The family part of it. I didn't realize there's so many families involved and so talented. I mean, the voices and the dancing and the, you know, piano playing. It's amazing.
Great show as always. This is our fourth time seeing it live, so it gets better and better, and we like the new addition, the new number. My wife wants me to dance like that, but that's not happening anytime soon. But that was a great, great show.
It was stunning. It was powerful and emotional. And I have an Irish Scottish background, and it just moved me. It's just amazing. If you love Celtic music, it's just so powerful. It's so amazing. I mean, I cried through half of the first thing because I was just so thrilled by it.
It was really great storytelling all around. You didn't want it to end.
Yeah.
You just wanted it to keep going.
I think it may be one of the first live performances we've been able to go to, you know, that's really, really powerful. So since COVID. So it's amazing to be able to get out and see it.
Oh, yes. That was beautiful. I got to stream it a couple days ago from headquarters. Being able to usher down here and being able to sit up really close, it was nice to be able to see it from up close.
What was your favorite part?
Oh, wow. I think the very favorite part for me was at the end. You know, it's kind of like, here we go to a dance show, and here I'm going to tell you my favorite part was the singing at the end. Yeah. Mr. Hilliker came out, and he was talking about, you know, the dawn and, you know, the promise, and, yep. You know, just knowing what that's all about is very, very, very inspiring. Yeah, very, very.
This is exactly what my soul needed. My brother died last week, and so the last songs spoke to me, to my heart. And, of course, the American thing is my son is a B-1 bomber aviator, and so he's in the Air Force, and so that spoke to me, too. It was wonderful. The whole thing was amazing.
That's some of the reaction coming from the Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area from the show that we had there a couple weeks ago. Last night, as I said, the performers were in Birmingham, Alabama, and they are, even as we speak, en route to Nashville, Tennessee. The Nashville performance is at the world-famous Ryman Theater. That's on Monday night at 7:30. I think there's already about 550, 600 people that have bought tickets for that event. And I noticed this tweet this morning coming out from the Celtic Throne Twitter account. It says, our show is composed of families. You heard a lot about that there in the montage. It's composed of families who have grown up dancing and playing music together. It's a perfect show for families. Celtic fans, and those looking for a good time. It says, we're coming to the Ryman Theater or Auditorium Monday, June 21st. It says, use promo code FAMILY. Use promo code FAMILY for a discount on a 4-ticket package. So this is the perfect family event, and in particular, after all of the lockdown craziness, and we'll come to some of that here in just a moment as well. But don't forget, it's right there in the middle of Tennessee, which in a lot of ways is toward the middle of the United States. So if you're within striking distance of Nashville, Tennessee, you can see Celtic Throne, and you can also see this world-famous auditorium as well that has all of that history with the Grand Ole Opry. So that's coming up on Monday evening. So back to this unidentified male, this audio that's circulating across the internet. He says there, three British Air pilots died within a week or so, and all of them after taking the jab. And then he goes on and says in that same audio that British Airways is in crisis talks with the UK government. What are we going to do? I mean, you're likely to get blood clots or more likely to get blood clots just from flying. So now, I mean, if 80-some percent of pilots have taken the jab, and then there's all this information coming out now that it's causing blood clots, this could be dangerous. And so the fact checkers spring into action, and they've got to quickly tell you it's been debunked. Oh, yes, just like the Wuhan lab theory. They find out within seconds if it's been thoroughly debunked. This is from Reuters, and you see the title of the piece, Fact Check, British Airways is not in crisis talks with the government over vaccinated pilots. There's no crisis talks going. They don't address the pilots who have died. Let's leave that aside. But look, there's no crisis here. Forget about the reports. Forget about the 6,000 that have died, the reported cases of deaths in the United States. Forget about the tens of thousands that have died worldwide. And then all these reports, the brain hemorrhages, the cardiac arrest. You had a 29-year-old soccer player just keel over a week ago. And we get no explanation except that, well, it surely wasn't because of the vaccine. Come on. Some strange things happening. This is a tweet. It came out from British Airways just today. They, too, want to quickly reassure you that, look, there's no crisis talks going on. And they want to tell you, too, that they're not related in any way to each other, these four cases. I guess it just happens all the time, randomly. Four British Airways pilots in their 30s, 40s, and 50s dying. British Airways says this. Sadly, four members of our pilot community passed away recently. Our thoughts are with their family and friends. However, There is no truth whatsoever in the claims on social media speculating that the four deaths are linked. So no additional information. It does raise a lot of questions, given the climate that we're in at the moment. It does raise a lot of questions. Listen to this comedian. He's not making jokes in this little presentation of his. He's gotten the jab twice. And listen to him describing the after effects of the Moderna vaccine, clip 9.
I'm still suffering from the effects of the COVID vaccine. I had the Moderna, and I had my second shot on April 17th. So now it's June, 9th today? So I have stiff neck. My stiff neck is not going away. It's sore. I still have flu-like symptoms. So meaning body aches, joint pains, and tiredness that comes in waves. By the way, I went to my primary physician. She says, yeah, I'm treating five people who have exactly like you. One of them is a neurologist. One of them is a nurse. And they were afraid to talk about their symptoms because they didn't want to be stigmatized and ostracized, because that's the culture we're living in now.
Yeah, you can't even bring it up. So he's giving you a little bit of inside information there. And then, again, this is second and third hand, but still, that there are a few people speaking out, but there's quite a few others that don't want to say anything because the pressure is so intense. You're going to be ostracized. You're going to be canceled. You're going to be blotted out. If you speak the truth, you just listen to the authorities, listen to the experts, and get the jab. That's what they say in the UK. In fact, they're making threats now. Matt Hancock, he came out. He's the health secretary in Britain, and basically he had a statement yesterday, I think, in Parliament, saying that if somebody comes into NHS, the National Health Service, that Britons pay, they pay these skyrocketing tax rates to pay for this service. And you've got Matt Hancock yesterday implying that if you don't get the jab, you should go to the back of the line. And of course, every winter, those hospitals in the UK are always overflowing because of flu and things like that. And he's basically saying, give first preference to those that have gotten the jab. Discriminating against those that make a choice. No, I don't want to get it. Vaccine, that's vaccine passports for you. That's right. That's the direction that they're heading in Britain, in Europe, and in some places in the United States. Boris Johnson the other day, I meant to get to this earlier this week as well, just keep running out of time, but he announced that the lockdown was going to continue for several more weeks and implied that it might even go beyond that. And then listen to this statement he made about the vaccination. This is clip 14.
And sadly, a proportion of the elderly and vulnerable may still succumb even if they have had two jabs.
They may still die. He's not talking about death from the vaccine. He's saying you might get two jabs and still die of COVID. Well, that's a new one. I thought it was supposed to protect you from COVID. Get the jab. Get two jabs. It may not protect you from COVID. And, oh, by the way, you might also get a brain clot, a blood clot, a brain hemorrhage, cardiac arrest. No wonder people on social media, they just, and this is one, as you've heard on this program, even in the last few days, it's just one of many big lies that the ruling class, the propaganda media, the elites, the experts, the scientists, they've been exposed, so many of them, as dishonest, as liars. And here they come along, and quickly, like nothing makes the fact checkers spring to life. Quite like telling the truth about the Wuhan flu, the election steal, January 6th, And now the vaccination, or the vaccine. As I say, Boris Johnson was on TV, I believe this was Monday night, and here he is here he is telling the people of Britain, look, the lockdowns, we've got to continue. I think the Daily Mail had a headline, day 450 of the lockdown. Day 450! 2 weeks to stop the spread, right? Wrong. Here's Boris Johnson from Monday, clip 13.
That, of course, doesn't exclude the possibility, I'm afraid, and we've got to be honest about this, the possibility that there is some new variant that is far more dangerous, that kills people in a way that we currently cannot foresee or understand.
There may be other variants, so we could have to extend this, and he's also made remarks suggesting that the reason we might have to extend it is because not enough people have gotten the jab. So he's going to just wait and see. If the British people are obedient enough and everyone gets their jab, well, then we'll see. Maybe we'll lift the lockdown. We're not entirely sure yet. This is from NBC, a headline. It says, the science around the lab leak theory hasn't changed, but here's why some scientists have. So the science hasn't changed, but scientists have changed their views, their opinions, their conclusions. Why? Trump! It always gets back to Trump. If Trump says it in 2020, the scientific community said another thing. Now that Trump's out of the way, now the scientific community's coming around, if you can believe it. They're coming around to the Wuhan lab leak theory. The politicization of science. Remember, it's all about the science, right? That's what we've been hearing for a year and a half, this article at NBC. It quotes from an MIT and Harvard graduate, this woman, Alina Chan, and she, along with 17 other scientists, published a letter in the journal Science last month, calling for a more in-depth investigation into the virus's origin that takes into account theories about both natural occurrence and laboratory spillovers. So they came out with this, she and her friends, just a few weeks ago, conveniently enough, after Donald Trump left the White House. And then notice this quote from NBC. Chan said there had been trepidation among some scientists about publicly discussing the lab leak hypothesis for fear that their words could be misconstrued or used to support racist rhetoric about how the coronavirus emerged. In other words, what Trump was saying came from the lab. It's the China virus. It's the Wuhan flu. And they couldn't have a part of that. No. So they started getting out there and talking about the bat theory. And that makes China look a lot better, doesn't it? The fact that they eat bat soup. Yet now they come around. NBC, it says, at the time, it was scarier to be associated with Trump and to become a tool for racists. So people didn't want to publicly call for an investigation into lab origins, says this scientist, this expert. And it's there on NBC, just like the Time magazine piece from a few months ago, which all but admitted, yeah, we stole the election. Here's how we did it. They can't help themselves. They lie and they lie and they lie. And then when the truth comes out, they brag about why they had to lie. I mean, this is unbelievable. And it's every day. It's just hurled at us every day. It's nonstop. Who is the father of lies? Read John 8 and verse 44. What is Revelation 12 and verse 9? I mean, if you were never a believer about that verse, the fact that the devil has deceived the whole world, I bet there's quite a few believers that are coming around now, seeing the wisdom, the truth. The truth in the inspired word of God. You just have to weed through it every day, the lies. Listen to Dr. Fauci earlier this week talking about how that, oh yeah, I was always open to the lab leak theory. This is clip 10.
People forget that. But if you go back then, even though you lean towards feeling that this is more likely a natural occurrence, we always felt that you've got to keep an open mind. All of us. We didn't get up and start announcing it, but we've always said keep an open mind and continue to look. So I think it's a bit of a distortion to say that we deliberately suppress that.
Right, right. Yeah, I always had an open mind. What did those 27 scientists say in the, what is it, the Lancet? The Lancet statement from last year? We stand together to, this is the group I think headed up by Peter Daszak, you know, Fauci's crony, the one that worked in North Carolina, funneling the money over to Wuhan. These doctors last year, these scientists, we stand together to strongly condemn conspiracy theories suggesting that COVID-19 does not have a natural origin. And now here comes Fauci, the pathological liar that he is, and says, oh, we never did announce anything like that. Our minds were always open to the fact that it could have been a lab leak. No, it's just like NBC admitted. Proudly, quoting scientists. She's speaking for her friends. We didn't want to say it last year because, well, Trump always gets back to Trump, the bad orange man. What other lies are going to be exposed? What other narratives are collapsing? You're seeing the January 6th narrative completely collapse. You're seeing the election steal or the fact that it was supposedly perfect. That too, that's collapsing. The truth. The truth will set you free. Don Lemon, he thought there was a big, well, I'll get to that in a second. Let me just give you a follow-up to yesterday. I gave you the rundown on what's happening in Georgia. That report coming from that contractor commissioned by Raffensperger himself back in November, the days right after the election. Here's this contractor, and he's just chronicling all of these errors. I mean, it's just like a comedy of errors almost, but it's true. The incompetence, and then, of course, the deceit, the lying, the cheat, people openly on elevators saying, yeah, we're here to mess everything up. And look at what happened. This is regarding Michigan. Again, it comes from John Solomon, Just the News. They're putting out some pretty good reporting. Of late, it says, hundreds of people concerned about the integrity of the November 2020 election gathered outside the Michigan Capitol Thursday to protest and deliver roughly 7,000 affidavits claiming fraud and demanding a forensic audit. 7,000 sworn statements. No evidence. We've seen no evidence of voter fraud. That's been the fact that the election was stolen. Now, that's been thoroughly debunked. That's what they said at about 12:01 a.m. on Wednesday, November 4th. They had thoroughly looked into this. It was a perfect election. Just the News says Michigan Conservative Conservation Coalition spokesperson Matt Seeley said thousands of Michigan voters have questioned the integrity of the 2020 election. If we do a deep dive forensic audit similar to Arizona, it will, and of course, these Michigan reps, they visited the Arizona audit, as did several other states. It says it will do either one of two things, he said. It will prove that all the politicians who say there's nothing to see here, well, they were right. Or it will prove that there's a big problem with the integrity of our elections. See, it's one of two. Either the radical left gets to take a victory lap, or it exposes fraud. Massive amounts of fraud. And, of course, it's because of that second option or that second outcome that Rachel Maddow and friends don't want there to be any forensic audits. Not in Arizona, not in Georgia, not in Michigan, not in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Nevada, Colorado, New Hampshire. It's gaining steam, isn't it? It's gaining steam, this movement. They're pushing through to the end in Arizona, and who knows what's going to explode onto the scene from Georgia. That's two states That right there, isn't that, I think, 25, 26 electoral votes? I don't remember the exact numbers. But listen to Don Lemon last night on CNN. He thought it was a major gotcha moment from the night before when Donald Trump was on with Sean Hannity talking about the election. And then Don Lemon, he says, hey, did you hear Donald Trump admit that he lost? Has he admitted that? You know better. But here's Don Lemon from last night, clip four.
We were supposed to win easily at 64 million votes, and we got 75 million votes, and we didn't win.
We didn't win. We didn't win. Did you hear him? We didn't win. Yeah, no kidding. You did not win. He knows it. He's always known it. His supporters in Congress have always known it, too. But instead of saying then what he says now, Trump spawned deadly violence at the Capitol, and Republicans are trying to whitewash it, just like they're still trying to whitewash racism in America's past, trying to block teaching America's school kids about the history of racism in this country and the impact on our country, railing against it, calling it anti-American.
Whitewashing away what happened on Jan 6, as he says there. And then whitewashing away racism. We've got to push forward. That's another big lie. That's another false narrative that they are just cramming down our throats, this critical race theory, this Marxist movement, this Marxist system of education that's intended to divide the nation along racial lines. Yesterday, Joe Biden signed into law this Juneteenth holiday. It's now one of, I think, 11 or 12 yearly or annual federal holidays. And listen to Joe Biden talk about how proud he was to be able to make this a holiday in the middle of the summer. Clip one.
I'm shortly going to sign into law, making it a federal holiday. And I have to say to you, I've only been president for several months, but I think this will go down for me as one of the greatest honors I will have had as president, not because I did it, you did it.
One of the greatest honors that he will have had as fake president, to make Juneteenth something no one ever even heard of until last year. You remember the lead up to that Tulsa rally that Donald Trump had? It was on June 19th, and the left always looking for anything to say he's a racist, he's this, he's that. They said, why, oh, why would Donald Trump organize a rally on Juneteenth? To which everyone in America responded, what's Juneteenth? Well, now we know a little bit more about it. Last year, Vanity Fair said, Trump's Juneteenth Tulsa rally is the world's least subtle dog whistle. He's calling out the racists. Juneteenth, June 19th, back in 1865, this is when the Union soldiers, the white Union soldiers, went down to Galveston, Texas, and told the slaves there that the emancipation had been signed a couple years ago, and they were free. They were freed from the Democrats, really. That's what happened in 1865. So for Trump to schedule a rally in Tulsa on June 19th, obviously it shows he's racist. CNN headline from last year, Trump's decision to hold a Tulsa rally on Juneteenth is no coincidence. Everything's planned with him. He did it on purpose. Here comes the dog whistle. Here's a headline from The Hill. Trump's Tulsa decision sparks new race controversy. What's the controversy? And then finally, The Independent. Trump's next rally in a city that saw a notorious race massacre on date celebrating the end of slavery. So Juneteenth is celebrated by some as the date that slavery ended. Now, here's Joe Biden yesterday saying, this is my proudest moment. I mean, this is probably the greatest honor I'll ever have in my fake presidency. Now, listen to Joe Biden last year get Juneteenth confused with the Tulsa massacre that we've also heard a lot about in recent weeks. This is clip two.
He's going down to Texas on Juneteenth, right? The first major massacre, literally speaking, of the Black Wall Street, right? Years ago.
He didn't even know what it was a year ago. And now he says it's his greatest honor. This is, it's a total fraud. It's a total fraud. And all day yesterday, all the ceremony, you hear all of these Marxist radicals saying, well, this is a start, but it's only the beginning. I mean, we've got to push. We've got to push through critical race theory. We've got to push through H.R. 1 to make sure that the minorities can vote because they're like slaves. Even today, there's a line, that a through line, as they like to say. It runs right through to today. We need a day of reckoning. And the fake president yesterday says, here's the start. Here's the start. It's Marxism through and through, except that they're just using race, as we've said before. We've written about that at the Trumpet magazine. He it's his greatest honor. And last year, he, like most people in America, had no idea what it was. No clue. And now it's used as a weapon, isn't it? And wouldn't you know, it comes just a couple weeks before July 4th. The main holiday for all of America, right in the middle of the summer. You've got freedom, liberty, celebrated on July 4th. And June 19th, what do we sell? Are they really going to celebrate the end of slavery? Or is this going to be used as a tool to divide America along racial lines? Of course it's the latter. This is critical race theory in motion. They want it in your schools. They want it in government. They want it in holidays. They want it everywhere. They want you to know that white people all over the world, but particularly in the United States, are inherently racist. And there's conservatives, there's black conservatives that see right through this. They know what's happening. But the Marxists, they keep going forward. Listen to this radical, and you don't even want to play it in one sense, but the fact that this woman teaches at Yale, of all things, listen to her responding to I don't know if you could call him a journalist, but you'll hear their exchange. Clip three.
There are no good apples out there. White people make my blood boil. When you say there are no good apples out there, what kind of claim are you making? Would it be fair to say, based on your expertise, that white people are psychopathic?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's many lies that, and I didn't get to that part because what I've delivered was only part of a first series of talks, but the level of lying that white people do that has started since colonialism, we're just used to it.
Yeah, of course. He asked there, well, do you think they're psychopathic? I think so. I think white people are psychopathic. Yeah. We're wrapping up now. Great. I'll go back to my posh university position at Yale. At Yale. She teaches your young people. She teaches America's children. No wonder. No wonder those Joel Hilliker gave a lecture recently. They mentioned this story where the parents sent their child off to college, and then that child came back and started lecturing and correcting the parents. You shouldn't be watching Fox News. You shouldn't be saying this. You shouldn't be doing that. These young people are being indoctrinated by teachers like that woman. As I say, there's some black conservatives that see right through it. They know what's happening here. They know it's destroying our nation. Listen to this black doctor or physician. He's at a school board meeting in Illinois. This is clip five.
When you talk about critical race theory, which is pretty much going to be teaching kids how to hate each other, how to dislike each other, it's pretty much what it's going to all come down to. You're going to deliberately teach kids, this white kid right here got it better than you because he white? You're going to purposely tell a white kid, oh, the black people are all down and suppressed. How do I have two medical degrees if I'm sitting here oppressed?
How did I get two medical degrees if I've been oppressed? It's teaching young people how to hate. Now, who's behind that? That would be the god of this world, Satan the devil. And so all of these prophecies just coalescing together in many ways. 2 Corinthians 4:4, Revelation 12:9. And then you think about the sobering reality of Ezekiel 4 and 5, the coming civil war in the United States. Satan is just pouring fuel on this fire of hate. You think Juneteenth is going to bring the nation together? You think it's going to, do you think it's intended by these Marxist revolutionaries to heal the wound? Of course, the United States has wounds. But you could pick and choose one massacre or hate crime after another. Both sides could. You think this is something that people are going to really celebrate and that people will come together over? Or will it be used to divide? Will it be used to stir up hatred for others? You know the answer. And that's why we need God, all of us, God, all races. We need God's word. We need God's truth. We need God's spirit. We need the spirit of God's love. When we come back, we'll continue on with, I think I covered it a little bit on Wednesday, but I meant to get through some of the verses about the incredible human potential in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 2. So we'll finish today's program with more on that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback, we've been getting quite a few emails of late. Feel free to write us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Every particle of human suffering, unhappiness, misery, and death has come solely from the transgression of God's immutable law. Obedience to God's law liberates us from all unhappiness, pain, and suffering. It frees us from captivity, from spiritual slavery. Obeying God's commandments guarantees a life overflowing with joyful abundance. For much more on this subject, request a free copy of The Ten Commandments. When you make your request, don't forget to enroll in the Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 36-lesson course is a distance learning program that will help you to get to know your Bible. Each month, you will receive a lesson that guides you in discovering the answers to life's most important questions, all from your own Bible. Your enrollment has already been paid for. Enroll today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
On Wednesday's show, we talked a little bit about developing the character of God, and I noted there at the end of the program how that character is essentially coming to a knowledge of what is right and what is wrong as defined by God's inspired word, and then making the choice to do the right. And then following that, really exercising the will to follow through and do the right as opposed to the wrong. And in doing that, we become more and more like our Creator. God doesn't sin because He just won't. He just won't do it. There's nothing to stop Him from doing it. But He is love. God is love. And He loves all of mankind. And He's called out a few, a precious few, in these last days to support the work of God and to prepare for their roles in God's kingdom as teachers, as the bride of Christ, when everyone will have an opportunity to learn God's way and to understand about God's character, to learn and understand the love of God, the laws of God. Hebrews 1 and verse 1, I'll just set the stage for chapter 2 with these first few verses. In Moffat, it says in verse 1, "Many were the forms and fashions in which God spoke of old to our fathers by the prophets, but in these last days, at the end, He has spoken to us by a Son whom He has appointed heir of the universe, as it was by Him that He created the world." So this is referring to Jesus Christ. You can look at Ephesians 3:9, where it says God created all things through Jesus Christ. So they worked together as one. They became Father and Son when the Word came in the flesh. You can read about that background in John chapter 1. But it says about the Son here in verse 3, He, reflecting God's bright glory and stamped with God's own character. He was just a reflection of His Father and His Father's character. Stamped with God's own character. It says He sustains the universe with His word of power. When He had secured our purification from sins, He sat down at the right hand of the Majesty on high. So now He's there at the throne of God. He came and prepared the disciples for the establishment of God's church. And then He sacrificed Himself as that lamb sacrifice, but was then resurrected from the dead 3 days, 3 nights later. And even now is at the right hand of God, but He's about to return to this earth. That's the hope of the gospel. That's the reality. That's the true narrative. It's coming. It's coming. You can be sure it's coming. And you can be sure it's coming soon, because we're living right in the days of what's described in 2 Timothy 3, in Isaiah 1, Isaiah 3. We went through those chapters recently. It says in verse 4, being made so much better than the angels, as He has by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. So much better than the angels. And the angels, I mean, come on. Lucifer, that was the Mr. Armstrong would say that was the greatest being that God could create instantaneously by fiat. And you can read about his training and how it was before he turned to lawlessness by studying Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28, and so on. But Christ, Jesus Christ, the Word of God, God's spokesman, it says, made so much better than the angels. So there's the first few verses of Hebrews 1. You can continue studying Hebrews 1. Well, maybe I can just read verse 8. It says, but unto the Son, He says, your throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness is the scepter of your kingdom. Your throne is forever and ever. Now, chapter 2. The first chapter, we read about God and His Son, Jesus Christ. We read about how Jesus Christ was made so much better than the angels. But what about man? What does the Bible have to say about you and me? Why are we here? What is our purpose? Verse 6 of Hebrews 2. Well, verse 5 first, it says, for unto the angels has He not put in subjection the world to come, whereof we speak. So here's the context for this chapter, the world to come. And notice that world, it's not going to be put, they're not going to have subjection. The angels, the world's not going to come underneath the direction of the angels. Verse 6, it says, but one in a certain place testified, this is speaking of David, testified saying, what is man that you are mindful of him, or the son of man that you visit him? I mean, you've got God, the great creator God. You've got Christ the Son, so much better than the angels. Then you have the angelic realm. This is the real spirit world. There is a spirit world. And we talk often about Satan the devil and his demon army. But this spirit world is real as well. And notice how God, Paul, under the inspiration of God, he brings mankind made of the flesh, made of material substance. He brings man right into this awesome calling. Again, verse 6, it says, but one in a certain place testifies, saying, what is man that you're mindful of him? What is it that we have in common with this great God described in Hebrews 1? Well, read verse 7. It says, you made him a little lower, or for a little while lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor and did set him over the works of your hands. Moffat says, for a little while you have put him lower than the angels, crowning him with glory and honor, putting all things under his feet. I mean, that's awesome. That's incredible. That for a little, only a little while, we're going to be lower than the angels. I mean, this is something spectacular that's about to happen for those who are submitted to God's law, for those who are serving and supporting God's work. And of course, the opportunity, the potential, it stretches out to all of mankind, ultimately, to everyone who's ever lived. Verse 8, notice this. It says, you have put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him, but now we see not yet all things put under him. So God's about to put us over everything. It's not happened yet. It's not now, but in the future. We're for a little while lower than the angels, but wow, what a calling to be given jurisdiction over the universe, in fact. The world first, and then the rest of the creation of God. The bride of Jesus Christ, and then the billions and billions of children that are to be born into that family. It all gets back to family, doesn't it? This is why we're promoting and celebrating the performance, Celtic Throne. This is why Sam goes around after the show and gets people's feedback, the reaction that they take away from this family production, from a production that celebrates a message that's positive and hopeful, ending with tomorrow's light. There's a message in Celtic Throne. It's not just an opportunity for young people to have a little fun and to go on tour and to travel down to Alabama or Tennessee. There's a message there. It's an extension, really, of the kingdom of the gospel of the kingdom of God. Why don't we play that other montage since I'm on it again? I played you the one at the top of the show from Irving, Texas. This is the one that Sam prepared from Amarillo, Texas, just a few days ago.
I enjoy the Irish dance and see, I'm half Irish, so yep. This is good for me to see that stuff.
Absolutely outstanding so far.
What's been your favorite part?
The precision.
Yep.
I like the singing, and the head gentleman that's dancing is unbelievable. All in all, it's fantastic. I even love the scenery that's behind the stage, looking at the mountains and that type of thing. It gives a nice perspective of Ireland and what's going on and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah. So, all in all, unbelievable.
I love it. I love it.
What's been your favorite part so far?
All of it.
Oh, okay. We went to Edmond for the debut last year. It was incredible then, and it's incredible now.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It was awesome.
Spectacular.
Start to finish, it was awesome.
It was amazing and very moving and beautifully done, exciting. I think my favorite part is just how they all move together and can be doing the same thing, so many people at the same time.
It was really, really beautiful. Just amazing.
It was a great show. It was wonderful. The kids were wonderful. The little ones were the best.
It was absolutely wonderful.
Good.
It was excellent.
What was your favorite part?
Oh, gosh. Well, the patriotic songs.
Yeah, I love that.
Was wonderful, and the costumes and the dance, all of it, the music. The singing, it was just great. Very inspiring.
I thought it was just awesome. Just great. I just can't believe. These guys were younger than I thought. Just looking at them from the audience, I thought, oh, yeah, they're older, except for the little kids. They're all so professional, just so...
precise.
Precise. Yeah, that's a good word. They were just so synchronized together. Just a beautiful performance.
It's magnificent. The kids are just awesome.
These young people performing Irish dance at such an accomplished level.
Yeah.
And so much energy, and it's so good.
We loved it.
Loved
it.
It was phenomenal. And great energy, enthusiasm.
We've seen Riverdance. These kids
are amazing.
Is it better than Riverdance?
It would say it's just as good. Yeah. I mean, for me, for age.
This is surprisingly great. I love it. I want to see it again. I'm going to Tulsa to see it again. Start all over with it.
There you go. I want to start all over with it. There's a few of us here in Edmond that have seen it 15, 20 times. And it's one of those shows that just never gets old. So uplifting and so as you heard earlier, so family-oriented. That's what Hebrews 1 and 2 is talking about. A God family. A family orientation. And it's going to bring so much blessing and honor and glory to this world. To the human race, to all races, to both genders. There's just two. Marriage and family. It says from the very beginning, God made us male and female. He created sex. He created the two genders. Why? So that they might marry and build a family. That's what God is. Were it not for the fact that God is a family, there would be no such thing as physical family and marriage. God made it. God ordained it. God instituted it. It's obvious if you're just willing to do a little bit of study. Mr. Armstrong wrote that masterful booklet, Why Marriage? You can get that at our website, thetrumpet.com. We've got a phone number, toll free. You can call 1-866-930-3024. Get that. Get the incredible human potential. That's by Mr. Armstrong, too. Verse 8 again, here in Hebrews 2, it says, "You have put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him." It hasn't happened yet. But what do we see? Continue in verse 9. It says, "We see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man." We see Christ. He's gone on before us. We see his perfect example. We see his sacrifice. We see that he's been resurrected from the dead, that he's at the right hand of God, and that he soon returns. He will soon return to this earth. Verse 10 says, "For it became him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings." God wants to bring many sons into his family, billions of sons into his family. And Jesus Christ, our elder brother, the husband of the wife that is the church, he will, if we follow in his steps, we see him, he's gone on before us. He'll lead us right into the kingdom of God. Right into God's family. Right out into the universe. This is a tremendous undertaking on God's part. Setting out to reproduce himself. That's the message of Genesis 1. The same chapter where it says he made them male and female. Notice verse 3, just back up to this. Paul says, well, verse 1, he says, "Give the more earnest heed to those things that we've heard, lest we let them slip away." And then he continues in verse 3, "How shall we escape if we neglect, so great salvation?" How are we going to escape if we neglect something so great, so momentous? Something so spectacular as this. That's how you stay the course. Keep your eyes on the prize. Keep this eternal godly vision right at the forefront of your thinking. And then you'll be on a sure foundation and producing the fruit of God's character in you. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Email us, td@thetrumpet.com. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week. We'll see you next week. Also, don't forget about the weekend edition on Sunday.